everybody, and welcome to Comedy Death Star, the podcast that digs into the dark side of comedy. I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Our guest this week is L.A. storyteller Horace R.A. Is that what you say? Horace Ra?
Horace Ra.
Okay, yes. That was one of my questions. How do you say your name? What do you call yourself? Horace Ra. Okay.
Yes.
In the next hour, we'll find out more about the transformation from mere human to exalted Egyptian god of this, because that's you, Horace.
Yes,
is it?
Exactly.
Used to be human, and boom.
Yes, there you go.
I'm going to ask about the whole bird head thing. Anyway, but first, a message from our corporate overlords. Comedy Death Star is a production of Actors Comedy Studio and ACSDigital.tv. I'm Denzel Myers. Our guest today is the very ancient Horace Ra.
Yes.
Yeah. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful.
So, yeah, what the hell is up with your name?
Horace Ra.
You weren't born with this name.
No, I wasn't.
You had a moment where you decided this was it.
This is a moment,
yeah,
yes.
What happened?
This is when God woke me up from my dream.
Okay.
And told me who I really was. Told me to pay attention to my life, this whole journey.
Yes.
Gave me the ability to remember my life since birth. Remembering when I was born. Remembering when I'm 6 months years old. Remembering all the things that happened to me.
Okay.
In detail.
Was that a pleasant experience or not a pleasant experience?
At the time, it was really scary experience.
Yeah. Yeah,
because if you're talking to God and you're actually hearing voices and it's telling you things, it's really freaky.
Yeah, that's freaky.
And I thought I was losing my mind and going crazy.
Sure.
So I'm like, oh, no, this is what's really going on.
Yeah.
So for God to send me a message to let me know that I wasn't crazy,
right?
Everything happens for a reason. There's no such thing as a coincidence.
Okay, I'm with you there. Yeah.
So he says, the temple of Horus is built in your exact same body measurements. This is how you're supposed to know who you are as a human being.
Temple of Horus in
the temple
in
of
Egypt.
Horus in Egypt.
Uh-huh.
So I took a measuring tape and I measured everything, how they built the Temple of Horus.
Okay.
Which is a height.
Yes.
6 feet.
Okay.
Arm span. Size of feet, 12.
Uh-huh.
Everything from an inch. They used to get an inch. They used from a thumbnail to end of the knuckle.
Right.
Inch and a half. Everything was a perfect match.
So you measured yourself.
Yes.
And then you got the measurements from this Egyptian temple.
Yes.
And they matched up.
Exactly.
That must have also been freaky. Were you tripping?
Yes. And I said, and that's when I knew there's no such thing as a coincidence. Just like God said.
And
that's who you are.
And where do you get the coordinates and the measurements of the Temple of Horus? Like on Wikipedia or some crap like that?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to go there.
Right. Yeah. I want to see the temples, the temple, how they built the temple.
Sure.
And I want to see all these things and how the stars lined up with the stars in the sky.
Right.
And
it
all these
made sense for you in your life. Yeah.
And it all made sense. It all made sense to the experiences I was having in my life and how I was supposed to be, why I'm such a great storyteller and I have so many good stories, and these things were, this was your destiny, this was meant for you to do, and that's why I have so many incredible stories.
So this opening that you had, when did this happen? 2011?
2012.
So
yes.
Not that long ago.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And was there some trigger that made this happen, or just one day you're walking down the street and boom, you got some message and you're like, what's up?
Well, my life was going with women, you know, just horrible, you know, kind of like looking for love, you know,
in all the wrong places.
In all the wrong places. Uh-huh. Because I'm looking for love outside of myself. Mm-hmm. That's when God told me, no, you look for love inside yourself. Mm-hmm. You'll be the greatest love that you'll ever find. Okay, so I'm making all this money, okay? The job I had at the time, you know, I was a firefighter at first.
Yeah, firefighter, paramedic.
Paramedic. Mm-hmm. I left that because seeing so much death,
You were in it at this moment. You had this experience, you were in it or you had left already?
I had left already.
You had
I started
left.
Driving the trucks. Mm-hmm. And that was good. I was making more money driving trucks than I was as a firefighter and a paramedic. A lot more. And to me, life should have been good. But it was miserable, miserable. And I'm just, I'm about to have a breakdown. This is crazy. I'm making so much money, living good. I'm my own boss.
Right.
Right. I mean,
right. That's the American dream.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. But everything is miserable.
Wasn't working for you.
Yes. And one day I'm driving, and it's because you're not supposed to be doing this. This is your destiny. You're supposed to. I'm really tripping out.
It just came to you in that moment.
Yes, and like I said, and it was like when you're dreaming, mm-hmm. but you're not really asleep.
Right.
And that's how the moment happened. And wow, when I came out of it, it was like whoa. So I had to call my parents. It's
sure.
Like because I said I've been remembering stuff since birth.
Yes.
I'm remembering stuff when I'm 6 months. So I said I had to call my mom and say, "Hey, did this happen, or is this a nightmare I'm having?" Right,
right, right, yeah.
My mom starts freaking out. Who told you this?
Right.
I'm like, "No, mom, God told me this.
Right.
Nobody can remember that. No one can remember anything like that." She's freaking out, tripping out.
Anything in particular that?
Oh, bad stuff.
Yeah, okay. So, all right.
That's what my mom and my dad don't talk to me no more.
Right.
My dad hung up.
They don't talk to you anymore.
No.
Because of this experience. Because you start asking questions about your babyhood that they did not want to answer.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yes.
They don't talk to you.
They don't talk to me at all.
Wow.
Yes.
That's heavy.
I used to talk to my dad. My dad was driving trucks too.
Yeah.
So I would talk to my dad maybe 3 times a week.
Right.
You know, just, "Hey, how's everything going out on the road, blah, blah, blah." At least once a week I would go visit my little brothers.
Yep.
I got brothers and sisters the same age as my kids.
Okay.
You know, from my dad's second marriage. Yeah. But anyway, I would stop by and visit them and everything. And wow, after that experience.
And then.
Don't come by my house. He told me to lose his phone number.
Really?
Yes.
Because you said, "Did this happen to me when I was a kid?"
Yes.
He didn't want to go there.
He didn't want to go there. You need to forget everything that happened to you, and hung up.
Wow.
But I told him, I said, "Hey, listen, I'm not mad at you,
right.
any of these things. I'm just like, hey, I forgive you
right.
for everything you did." And he did some horrible things, really horrible things. But
you wanted to know, you were checking.
I was just checking, because I don't want to say you did something and you didn't do it and lie on you.
Right.
I don't want to do that. I don't want to put out any lies on my mom. I'm not going to do that.
You checked it out with them.
I just want to check it out.
And they shut it down.
If it happened, okay, this is what God is telling me.
Right.
Okay, this is where you learn to forgive.
Right.
And you know what I mean? And move on. Learn how to. So, like I said, they stopped talking to me. But the things that they did, like the one thing I asked my mom, and see, my mom's supposed to be this holy Christian lady. Okay? Well, you're not supposed to lie.
Right.
You're supposed to do all these.
Right.
So I asked her about these. Whoop! She's upset too.
She bit.
First she tried to deny it.
Right.
And then she's like, Then she's like, "I don't know who told you this." I said, "Mom, I already told you."
Yeah.
"God told me these things." So.
It's hard. It's hard for people to accept.
Yes.
You know, these kinds of. It's hard for you to accept.
And right. It was hard for me to accept when the things happen. Like the worst. The really bad thing that happened that I remember, what I thought was a nightmare, was my mom trying to commit suicide when I was 2 years old.
Wow.
Okay. So at the time, I'm 2 years old. She wakes me up screaming in the shower. My aunt is screaming, "You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that." You know, she had took some pills.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hearing all the screaming, all this commotion. I wake up. I come to my bed. I stand there, I see my mom, she's taking a shower. You know, I'm 2 years old.
Right.
Only thing I can see is, oh, my mom is taking a shower with her clothes on.
Right.
Why is she taking a shower with her clothes on? And my aunt is trying to keep her up.
Right.
And she's saying, "How many pills did you take? How many pills did you take?" And she told me, my aunt say, "Go get me some coffee." I was like, "What?" And so she told my mother, "You don't want to do this." At the time, my name was Harlan. She said, "You don't want to do this in front of Harlan." And my mom said, "I don't give a damn about Harlan. It's his fault anyway." And I remember that. She said, "I don't give a damn about him."
Mm-hmm.
Just like that. She said, "You don't want to live for your own son?" And she said, "No." Okay. I'm like, whoa. So I ran and I tried to get the coffee.
Right.
But I was too little. I couldn't get it. So I run back into the bathroom. And I tell my aunt, "I couldn't get it." And she said, "Hold your mom up because the water's coming. So water won't get in her face."
Right.
And I'm like, I'm trying to hold her up, but I'm only 2. So I can only hold her head up, and the water's coming down. I'm like, "Mom, Mom." And she won't talk to me. I say, what did I do? What did I do? Why you don't like me? Mm-hmm. And she won't even answer. She doesn't say anything.
So this is something that you had not remembered, but then when you're like 40-something, 50 years old.
I was 40 when I 46.
46, all this stuff came back.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And this is one of the things you asked her, and she didn't want to talk about it.
Yes. She tried to say it didn't happen.
I mean, I get it. It's hard.
Yeah. I mean, but it's just the worst. Like, what? How can you say I'm 2 years old? You don't give a damn about me. You're going to kill yourself and don't give a damn about me if you live. And then what she said was, so my aunt's like, what about my little brother? I had a little brother. Yeah. She said, what about, and his name is Myron. So she goes, what about Myron? What about Myron? Will you do it for him? Will you live for him? And she goes, okay.
Oh, man. So you're remembering, like,
I'm remembering all that stuff, and I'm remembering how they was treating me, like how my dad would tell me to, you know, I'm older than my brother, you know, so my dad would tell me to sit on my hands mm-hmm. and tell my brother to come beat me up, and tell me if you hit him back, I'm gonna beat your ass. What? So my brother comes pow pow, hit me in the face, hit me up, and then my mom would be laughing, saying, "Oh, you know that's not funny." I said, well, if it's not funny, why are you laughing?
So this is another thing you remembered when you're 46, 47.
Yeah. Yes. Wow. Uh-huh.
And so now what do you make out of all that stuff? Because it's not like, oh, I remember this when I was a kid and I'm still trying to work through it. It's that you went through your whole life not remembering these things.
Right.
And then you are shown these things, mm-hmm. presumably for some bigger reason.
Yes.
So, what do you make of all this stuff now? How do you have that memory and, not let it, I guess, close your heart up and affect you in a negative way? I guess that's my question.
Exactly. So that's what I had to learn how to do.
Yeah.
And so becoming Horace, that's what I did.
That was that transformation.
Yes. Yeah. I became a vegan. You know, I became everything that was true to myself and true to God.
Yeah.
You know, and my God I worship is Osiris and Isis. So I worship a male and female. Mm-hmm. That's what makes me the best lover I am today, the best lover of women ever. Okay.
All right, well, I'm going to give you a little competition. But, you know, maybe I'm doing the same thing. Okay.
Yeah, so if you know how to, if you worship a woman and praise a woman, give honor and respect, you know, the mother, the woman, the female. And that's how I treat the women, with more respect, honor, and, you know.
That's good. Uh-huh. And so I'm asking a lot of questions about this. So you had this moment, the spiritual awakening. You got all this new information. Parents, you know, had to deal with that.
Yeah.
This transformation to be Horace that you are today, did it happen like that? It took some time? Was that a difficult transition for you?
Not really,
okay.
Because I was always this loving person.
Right.
Only thing I had to change was my eating habits. You know, I became a vegan. You know, I learned about energy. You know, so eating that energy from a dead cow or dead chicken, you know, you're putting that energy into your body.
Got it.
If that chicken was in a cage and it was scared, you're putting that scared energy into your body. That cow was in a chained up, you're putting that scare into your body. So it's going to make you react the same way. You're putting that energy in you. Don't put that energy in you. Get the energy from the live living foods.
So
you can have that live living energy inside of you.
Yes. So let me ask a couple more questions about the you that you got now.
Okay.
I don't know much about Horus. Mm-hmm. The Egyptian Horus, who's a child of Osiris and Isis, right?
Yes.
In most pictures, he's either a bird, a falcon, or has a falcon head, right? And it's a god of the sky, of war, right? And of hunting. Anything else? You got this protective eye or the evil eye? I mean,
the protective eye, of course.
Well, I'm Italian, so we say the evil eye could be, all this stuff. So you locked into all this stuff now.
Yes, all those things symbolize something. Growing up, so growing up, I was always this defender of people, always this defender of especially women. And the reason why. Because my father was so abusive. So now I'm growing up, I can't stand to see somebody abuse a woman. Okay? I was 18 years old. I'm 5'7", weigh maybe 150 pounds. It's this guy lived in Los Angeles, supposed to be like the baddest Crip in the Crip gang. Yeah. I mean, was terrorizing the entire neighborhood.
Okay.
They used to call me L7 because I'm just, I don't drink, I don't smoke. I'm just happy.
Square joint, yeah.
Yeah, I'm just happy, lucky go guy.
Right.
Okay. So I don't really hang out with these guys much. But this gangster, this thug, beats up my friend's sister. But he beats her up bad.
Yeah.
But the friend of mine, he's supposed to be this gangster too. He's supposed to be, he's just in a different gang. He's supposed to be real bad and tough and all this stuff. He calls me up. He says, hey, a mad dog hit my sister.
Right.
He goes, he's at my house. He wants me. I said, well, tell him to get out your house. And he goes, he won't leave. I said, wait a minute. Mad Dog is in your house. He beat up your sister and he won't leave. I said, well, I bet you he leave when I get there. I can hear Mad Dog in the background laughing. Okay. Mad Dog is 6'5 and weighs 300.
Twice your size.
Yeah, 300 and something.
Twice pounds. For literally twice
yes.
your size.
Yes. Yeah. So I walk straight over there. I said, you like to hit girls? And he's got a little smirk on his face. And by the, before he can get what you gonna do out your mouth, I laid him out with one punch. And then he's laying down on the ground. My friend says, wow, what you gonna do now? I said, I'm gonna do him like my daddy used to do me. And I start stumping him out, wham, just stumping him into the ground. So after stumping him to the ground, my friend goes, wait a minute, your daddy used to stump you into the ground like that?
And what happened to that guy when he got up? Did he?
Oh, he left.
He didn't do shit to you,
he didn't
right?
do anything.
You're still here because he didn't kill you.
He didn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And then after that, everybody in the neighborhood just gave me so much respect after that. All the parents in the neighborhood was like, treated me so nice. It's like, wow, this dude was terrorizing our kids and everything. And thank you. They were thanking me for that.
Yeah. Now, let's change things up. You got a show. That you do the Elephant Tail Show.
Is yes.
A weekly show, monthly show? This is a storytelling show, right?
Yes, it's a monthly show. I hosted with Kate Chalk. Mm-hmm.
She's been on the show.
Oh, she's a wonderful storyteller.
Yeah.
You know,
Kate Chalk, can't stop talking. No, I anagrammed her name and it was like, won't stop talking or can't stop talking. Anyway,
Yes. Oh, she makes
She's awesome.
She's awesome. She makes a great call.
So you guys got a monthly show.
Yes.
And what's the focus of this show?
It's called Elephant Tales.
Okay.
So we tell funny tales that's unforgettable, since elephants have the most unforgettable memory. So that's exactly what we do.
And it's every Wednesday?
It's
Wednesdays?
The Wednesday, the first month.
All right.
The first Wednesday of every month.
I only remember it's Wednesdays. I have a class on every Wednesday, and I can never make shows on Wednesdays, so that's why I'm like, I can never see your show.
Oh,
so that's why it's stuck in my head. Okay. And what about your other show, The Horus Hour? What is that?
Okay, that's a storytelling comedy show.
Okay.
And I also have a band on that show.
A band?
A band, yeah. Oh, I call them the world's greatest band.
Okay.
They call it Veterans of Future Wars.
Okay.
Okay, so these future wars will be, they don't have weapons. Their weapons is their guitars, their keyboards. That's the weapons of the future, the music that they make.
Right.
Music with your mind.
Sound like Prince when you're talking
about that. Yeah, so you're making beautiful music, sending the beautiful energy and vibes out to the world, and that's what they do. And everybody can groove to it.
And so you have guests in the show? Is it just you?
Yes. Most of the time I have guests. The last couple of shows I just did like a hour special.
Oh.
You know, I did one time I did because people get storytelling and comedy mixed up sometimes.
Okay.
Well, yes. So, you know, it's real close. So I did one storytelling hour special, then I did one comedy, just told jokes. And
so it's like you're Johnny Carson, you got a band, or, you know, any late night guy, the host. You know?
Yeah.
And, all right. And now I wanted to also, it's on Dromebox.
Dromebox.
Yeah, what is that? I just never heard of that.
Oh, it's a local TV station.
Okay, local L.A.
Yes,
local L.A. Like a cable access station.
Yes.
Like we used to have back in the 80s.
Yes, right. It's a small station like that ran by Nolan Silverstein.
Okay.
He's a great guy, has a wonderful program there, you know, and gives new promoters and actors and comedians a place to go and show their talents.
All right.
You know, a lot of people can't afford to go to these big studios, but you can actually come there. It's a smaller studio, still have the same equipment.
Okay.
The nice equipment there, and
And do your thing. All right.
You
and it, and when you do it, it's live, right?
Yes.
And it goes out live where? Over his website?
Over the website. Over dronebox.com.
All right. And then it goes to YouTube after that.
Yes.
All right. Mm-hmm. That's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to check that out. Now, you got any interesting stories about being a firefighter or a paramedic? I mean, I just heard that's a freaky... It's a freaky world. I have had some friends that did that, and they were like, "Wow, you,
That was the reason why I left."
Yeah.
So for that, on the stories, I have I call them the swear jar stories, because you know the FCC fines you if you swear over the air, over the radio.
Yeah, airway. But this is not.
So
we're trying to talk about you being a firefighter and the sirens are going off. So I don't know.
No.
You don't have to work on the FCC. Worry about the FCC for this program.
Okay.
We're not really on the air.
Okay.
So, you know, we don't have any FCC.
Right. So, I didn't realize they had it for fire paramedics if you go on the air there, because you're going through the air, through the whole county and stuff like that.
Oh, so you mean on the radio?
Yes.
Uh-huh. If you're on the radio as a paramedic,
yes. You
can't say this shit is fucked up.
Right, yes. You can't say that.
I did not realize that.
Yes, you'll get fined. They'll fine the city. So I call these the swear jar stories because we would have a swear jar in the ambulance, and every time you swear, you'd have to put money in it, you know. So sometimes we're driving the ambulance, and if you swear, if you know you're finna swear that day, you just bring a pocket full of ones, you know. You get on the 405, right. You know you finna start swearing on that 405. So I would always have my partner drive on the 405.
And so how long did you do that job?
Oh, I did a firefighter and paramedic for 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So we have so many, like, oh, I tell you one call we had. We end up on the OJ scene. We were doing a regular transfer, and we're just taking somebody to a drug rehab.
Okay.
You know.
Picked him up at home, bringing him to drug rehab.
Well, we were taking him from the hospital.
Okay, transfer.
His home was supposed to be the rehab.
Got it.
When we get to the rehab, you know, it's late, and me and my partner are mad because we want some emergency calls.
Sure.
So we're trying to screw up our dispatcher's time because we're pissed off at him. So we, as soon as we get
to... Forgiving you a non-emergency.
Yeah, forgiving us.
That's boring.
Yeah, there you go. All right.
Just making sure I got it straight.
Yeah, so it's
you
boring.
You guys are adrenaline junkies. You want to be, you know, doing some
stuff. We want some action.
Yeah, and this guy, this thing, this call is not action.
Yeah, okay. We're taking some 40-year-old dude that was hooked on drugs, right. And he's going to a drug... So basically, this is a babysitter call.
Exactly.
So we babysitting a grown man. Come on, you know.
So you're taking him over there. Yeah, to get to the OJ part. Which is, you said OJ. Yeah.
So when we get to the place, we hear there's a homicide in the neighborhood. So my action was, I was like, man, they got drive-bys out here in this neighborhood?
Brentwood.
At the time, I'm not even knowing this Brentwood. I just know it's a nice neighborhood. Right. I'm just, wow, you live here? He's like, oh, man, this is a rehab. And right. he goes, you want to come in? I said, no, we're supposed to just drop you off here. And he goes, it's a lot of movie stars in here. I said, really? He goes, it's a lot of them. I go, movie stars in here? Come on. So I was like, told my partner, come on, let's go in. So we're in there, and we get lost in there for like 3 hours. We're just messing around, looking at the stars, seeing which stars, movie stars in there. And we're like, wow, they're not supposed to be here. I thought they were on vacation somewhere.
Right, yeah.
That was their vacation.
Their press secretary. That's what their press person says. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're tripping out of this, right? And we're in there for a long time. When we get out and we're loading up our gurney and stuff, we hear they're still out on this homicide and they're waiting for a coroner. And we go, I said, what? They've been there for a long time. I'm like, wow. My partner gets a map book, and he's looking inside the map book. Yeah. This is before the GPS stuff. And he goes like this. It's O.J.'s house. I said, O.J.? I said, O.J. Simpson? He goes, yeah, man, the juice. The first thing that comes to my mind is, how in the hell do you know where O.J. Simpson lives?
Yeah.
He said, you ain't never had a star map or took a star tour?
I said, no, hell no.
I grew up in L.A. No, I don't do that stuff.
He grew up, yeah. I was like, no. He goes, you want to go? I was like, why not? Hell yeah. So we start trying to get into the crime scene, but they got the entire neighborhood with the yellow tape around.
Yeah.
So finally we go, they're not going to let us in. Let's try to get out the neighborhood. We're trying to get out the neighborhood, and a cop comes up to us and goes, hey, because it's McCormick Ambulance. McCormick Ambulance also has a mortuary. Mm-hmm. So he said, are you guys the one? I was like, before I could say no, yes. My partner go, yeah, it's us.
He goes, always say yes when somebody asks you a question like that. Are you the guys who are supposed to be here? Yeah.
I was going to say, heck no. My partner was like, yeah.
So did you do the pickup?
No, we get there. So he says, they're down there. We drive up there. I'm looking. I don't see anybody standing out there. I only see the two bodies out there. And once we stop, like I said, I see the two bodies there. Now one cop runs up to us. He goes, hey, you guys, this is going to be a high-profile case. I go, why you say that? He goes, this is O.J. Simpson's house. I said, how in the hell does everybody know where O.J. Simpson is?
Well, the cops, now they know. Yeah, now they know.
So he tells me about the bodies there. And he says, we want to know if you guys can transport the bodies. Yeah. I said, this is an ambulance. We're not allowed to transport dead bodies. So we have to try to find out. We're going to try to find out if we can transport them. So I jump out. I put my gloves on. I'm going to jump out. He was like, couldn't see the guy. He was off in the bushes. Right. So I couldn't see. I could only see his feet sticking out the bushes. But I could see Nicole. Right. And at that time, they knew that was Nicole. They figured, well.
Yeah, they figured.
They figured it was her. They just didn't know who the guy was. But he wanted me to go check. It's so much blood everywhere.
Wow.
I jump out the unit because he was going to say, just say that we checked so we can move the bodies.
Right.
You know. So I jump out. I try to grab the gate and pull it open. And he goes, be careful. Don't touch the gate or step in the crime scene. But I'm holding the gate.
Right.
And I'm standing in the crime scene.
Standing in the blood, yeah.
It's so much blood. The blood is running on the sidewalk.
Wow.
So I never even got, I was just standing in the crime scene on the sidewalk. And I'm holding the gate. So I go, well, can you go to the back and ask them, how am I supposed to get back here without touching the gate and standing in the crime scene? So right after that, I let go of the gate. Because he couldn't see that I was holding the gate. It's still dark out there. Yeah. So he runs around to the back. And I jump back. And I look down. My partner goes, man, you got blood all over your shoes. I go, what? But I'm wearing boots. He's like, you got blood all over your boots. I'm like, man. So I start trying to wipe it off. He goes, whoa, don't wipe it off there, you idiot. Wipe it off down the street. So I'm hopping down the street on one foot.
Trying not to get the blood anywhere.
Yeah, so I already wiped it off with one foot. So I'm hopping down to wipe the other shoe off, hop all the way down the street, wipe it off. He's whistling because everybody's coming from the back now. Who's coming from the back? Mark Furman. He's coming from the back with some other detectives, and he's fucking pissed. What the fuck are you guys doing here? Who the fuck called these guys? Get the fuck out of here before you step in my crime scene. I was like, fuck you, man. Ain't nobody going to step in your crime scene. But I already stepped
in it. Stepped in it.
I was like, fuck, ain't nobody going to step in your crime scene. I said, we here trying to help you. You guys are the one that need somebody to move the bodies. He's like, we don't need your help. Somebody get them the hell out of here. Get them the hell out of here.
Just like TV.
Yeah.
Just like TV. Yeah.
Get those guys the hell out of here.
Yeah.
See, that's
I was
good.
Like, F you.
So it's your brush with celebrity, but everyone's dead, so
not, yeah. Yeah, and then Mark Furman, he's a crook. I've seen him before. See, that's what I'm telling you about, these stories that lead up there. I've seen him before when he was a detective, a narcotics detective. I've seen him before because of some other drug dealers that I went and seen this guy, and he was with him. This was during the time, you remember when they had the Bataram and stuff? And they had the drug wars. They had the drug wars in L.A. Like and all that stuff.
Yeah, that
was. That conspiracy
early
stuff.
Early 90s, man.
That was late 80s, and
I was living in New York, and then I moved to San Francisco around that time. But yeah, that's this stuff was happening.
Okay. So I end up meeting these guys. They were just hooked up with one dude's sister. Find out he's the biggest drug lord around, and he's telling me how they do it, how they do the game. Oh, they ship the drugs over here. I do this. I have to pay the police department. And I went with them to go meet the detectives. And guess who I see?
Mark Furman.
Yes. Got to pay this dude to keep these guys. I'm like, whoa. Wow. It was like really deep.
That was the crack days, man. That was some, you know, that was early 90s. That stuff.
Yeah. That was really bad stuff.
All right. We're going to change the subject now.
Okay.
We're going to just change it up. Because that was, you would get in there. Now I'm going to ask you, you got your shirt here is like a animal print.
Yes.
It's got giraffes and rhinoceroses and ibex. And your hat has a piece of material matching. Do you do this a lot? You match the band on your hat and your shirt thing? You had a fashion thing going on?
Yes.
You like to do that?
Yes. I have these custom made, these shirts custom made. Okay. And yeah, my auntie Juanita Boston does it.
All right.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the thing in your hat is the size. Like, yeah, did you tear off a bottom of a piece of the shirt or you had extra material?
Yeah, that's what she do. She makes a shirt, do the whole shirt, buttons, everything. Mm-hmm. Just bring a piece of cloth, go buy the buttons you want, and she'll just make it up, take the extra cloth, and
make
use
a little,
that
like,
band.
Headband for that. Now, does that come off that hat? If you want to change it and wear it with a different shirt, you can mix and match them.
Right.
It's like Garanimals.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
All right. Yes. And is this now, this is a dumb question, but this fashion thing, is this part of the new you?
Yes, it is.
Does it have some meaning for you?
Yes.
Well, tell me what that is.
Hey, this is my own style, my own creation.
Yeah.
You know.
So it's consistent with.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Your new identity, your new... Do you feel like you have a new identity being Horace as opposed to whoever you were before? Or, I don't know,
definitely.
Maybe that's too much, your new identity.
Oh, no, definitely. I love it. I love who I am today. And all my past experiences made me the person I am today.
And you got some kids.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How old are they?
I have some older kids, 22, 20. And then my younger kids are 12. And 9.
And so what are the older ones, maybe they've seen you go through this transformation. What do they think about this change? You know, they were teenagers, and all of a sudden their dad is changing his name and having this awakening. I mean.
Oh, they think, they probably think it's pretty weird because their mom does.
Okay.
And their mom is, you know, I got divorced from their mom. And
that happens. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
And so their mom's not.
So, yeah, I was I was divorced before I had that transformation.
All right.
And then.
That sounds like you don't really know how your two older kids think about this change in you.
Nah. They don't, not so much in contact with them that much.
Right. Just,
you know how it is. If you have ever been divorced and have kids, you have that. Oh, like my ex-wife would be telling my son not to call me. Like I bought them phones. She sent a message. Don't call him. You don't have.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, okay.
No, I got a little bit of that going on too, and I don't get it.
Right.
Because it only hurts the kids.
Exactly. Right. But what it is they think it hurts you.
I know.
So.
But how dumb is that?
Right, exactly.
Right? I mean, then you got kids growing up without a parent.
Exactly.
Because one parent is in the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Right.
I mean, I know it happens all the time.
Yeah.
But I don't understand how you keep doing it thinking that it doesn't affect the kids.
Exactly.
How do you keep that going 9, 10 years, 5 years, whatever it is?
Mm-hmm. It messes the kids up.
It does. All right. Here are some other questions. Do you have a sense or do you have any idea what happens when we die? Do you know? Or do you have a belief of what happens, where we go when we die?
Yes.
What do you think?
Well, I actually don't think we ever die, just energy. Lives forever. We just a transformation of energy. So that human body isn't here anymore.
Okay.
So now, since you didn't make it, to that next level, you'll come back to this earth and repeat it again until you find yourself and find that higher you, that spiritual being.
So that's a reincarnation story.
Yes.
Right? Like the Hindus believe in a reincarnation story. A lot of, you know, other cultures too, right?
So you'll come back and you'll experience this life and experience this life.
Keep learning stuff.
And keep learning learning till you evolve into that higher being.
So with your open connection to a spiritual realm, do you have any sense of past lives for you? I mean, is that part of the information you've gotten or not really?
Yes.
You have gotten some information.
Yes, I've gotten information on my past lives. Like all these, look, I remember things like when I was a kid seeing angels and stuff like that. And I remember asking my mom when I got older, like when I burnt my hand, you might see this little burn here.
Yeah.
I was 6 months. So I asked my mom. I told her the whole story that happened when I had this awakening. Told her everything that happened.
You knew how your hand got burned.
Mm-hmm. I told her everything. She's like, how do you remember that? And she was, I remember, I said, Mom, I remember you looking in the refrigerator saying you're going to put butter on my hand. I remember you calling my sister. And I said it was somebody in the kitchen sitting on the kitchen counter. Yeah. That figure, this was like a cloudy figure. I said, who was that? Mm-hmm. What was that? It didn't look like a human being. It looked, nobody was in there. That's mm-hmm. all she would always tell me. So after a while, I stopped talking about that because people would always say, you didn't see anything.
But nothing for you, happened. It's an angel.
Yeah, but for me, it was an angel because I didn't feel any pain, uh-huh. you know, when that happened. I was mm-hmm. feeling any pain, and it, I felt more comfort. Mm-hmm. Then I got another, when I was six years old, and going to school, and I got hit by a car. Mm. Now this car, I flew like 30 feet. So only thing I could remember is the grill of the car, because I was falling, as soon as the grill got ready to hit my head, uh-huh. something, but it looked like a wing or something, just something white, just real flash, boom, and I'm flying up in the air. I hit the ground. I don't have a mark or scratch on me. The lady that hit me, she knows she hits me.
Sure.
She starts screaming, and she stood out the car. I'm laying down. She starts screaming, and she sees me laying down, and she falls out. She faints in the car. Yeah. Yeah. And the guy has to go tell her that I'm okay. Yeah. But he's trying to get her out the car, and she goes, no, I hit him. I know he's dead. You know, you can't tell me what I did when I did it. He goes, no, he's okay. You didn't hit him. She's like, no. She's screaming, frantic. And so finally, he got me up off the ground, walked me over to the car so she could see that I was okay. Yeah.
But you felt a wing protect your face.
Yes.
The car is going to hit your head, and something got in the way uh-huh. to protect you.
Yes. And I flew, and it flew me up
and
in the air.
It pushed you, yeah.
Yes. And then you could...
But no marks?
Nope, not a scratch on me.
Not a scratch on
me. Not even from when I hit the concrete and I'm rolling.
Yeah.
I didn't even have any roll.
And again, did you remember this your whole life, or this was something you remembered later?
That's something I remembered later, too.
That you remembered, too?
Yeah, I remembered that for a long time.
Sure.
Because you get hit by a car. But I remember the actual details of the wing hitting me, flying up in the air, and the officer saying, that's like 30 feet.
All right.
You know, from
so some angel's been looking out for you.
Oh, yeah.
Along the way.
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh. Along
that's
the way.
That's got to feel good.
Oh, it feels great.
And change your perception or your idea of how you're in the world, who you are in the world, when you remember or recall that there have been moments when something was out there protecting you.
Yes.
That's got to give you confidence, like, oh, why do I always keep second-guessing myself or thinking I'm not good enough or something? I just need to go for it.
Right, exactly.
Things are helping me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. All the times I should have been dead, like I have my Taco Hell stories.
Uh-huh.
When this guy done killed, he got these guys coming. They killed 8 people in a row, okay? Going robbing fast food restaurants. The second the manager didn't give them money, they just killed them. And
like in the same night, you mean?
Well, they was in a spree. I think this happened maybe in a week spree.
Okay.
When the detectives came, they showed us how they're trying to catch them, and they mapped it out. They might be hitting these restaurants.
Okay.
And since I was working at a Taco Bell that got robbed every weekend, every weekend we got robbed.
Yeah.
He was like, we're going to hang out here because we know they come into this one. They hung out there, and they didn't come. They leave. About 30 minutes after they leave, then they came. They was called the Trench Coat Bandits.
Yeah.
Now, they done already killed these people that didn't give them to them. When I told them that I couldn't open the safe, the guy put his handgun back in his waistband and told the dude with the shotgun, kill him, and walked out the store. The guy with the shotgun pumped it and put it right to the bridge of my nose like that with his finger on the trigger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, dude, please, don't shoot me. I can't open a safe. And the dude was like, he kept saying, you can be a hero or you can be dead. I said, I'm not trying to be a hero.
Yeah.
I said, I just can't do it. And I put out everything in my pocket. And the last thing I put out in my pocket was my friend Ronnie's bus pass. And I slammed it put on the thing. I said, that's the last thing I got. He looked at my friend's bus pass and said, what's this? I said, that's my friend Ronnie's bus pass. But please don't take it because he's going to kill me. And he put the shotgun down. and turned around and walked out the store.
Wow.
Now, they left, went to another fast food place. Manager didn't open the safe, killed them.
So Ronnie's bus pass. Ronnie's bus pass saved my ass. Yeah. Well, yeah. You made the guy laugh.
Yeah.
You know, or something.
He just looked at it. He probably figured out, this is just a little kid. He's got a bus pass.
It was real.
Yeah. I'm not going to blow a kid's brains out. He's got a bus pass, man. Yeah, he's just a kid. And he probably just left. And then they went, killed the other guy, one more person, and then they got caught. So the detective came back to the store and asked me, he goes, hey, man, what did you do so they wouldn't kill you? He said, because they killed 8 people.
Right.
They left the store and they killed somebody else.
Right.
What did you do? They didn't hurt anybody in here. I was like, I guess they didn't have Ronnie's bus pass.
Yeah, they didn't have Ronnie's bus pass. That's good. All right, I got a few more questions for you. That's a good story. You must have told that on stage.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. How old were you when you first ran away from home?
12.
You ran away from home sometime.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I didn't go far.
Yeah. What do you remember about that day?
I couldn't even remember what I was mad about. We went to a restaurant, and I didn't get what I wanted to eat. So I was like, oh, I can't have this. I was mad. I'm out of here. I'm running away from home. Just something real childish.
And how far did you get? How'd you go?
Oh, I just ran to my backyard.
All right.
Hiding out in the backyard.
And then you came back home.
Wait until it got real dark. They're all calling me, walking up, calling me, and I finally came out.
All right. Here's another question. As a child, you had an imaginary friend. Yes or no?
No, I didn't have any imaginary friends.
You know how kids have imaginary friends, right?
Yeah.
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 You didn't have an imaginary friend?
No, you know, I actually just talked to God mostly. As a kid, yeah. I just talked to God. Yeah. I did, you know, I used to hear all the Jesus stories, and, you know, I went to church, you know, but I didn't believe it. It didn't make sense to me, the whole Jesus, somebody dying on a cross and for you. I'm like, man, how does that help me?
Right.
You know, that whole situation, I never believed that stuff. It didn't make sense.
So when you talk to God, it was some different God?
It was just God. I'll just say God. At the time, I didn't know God's name was Osiris. I didn't know his name was Osiris until I had the awakening.
Right.
Yes. So I would just pray to God, dear God, because I knew it's a higher level.
Right.
It's a more higher than just me, you know, this earth, you know.
And even as a kid, you knew that somehow.
Yeah.
All right. Uh-huh. Because not all kids know that necessarily.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, but you were feeling the thing. All right.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So your imaginary friend, I'm going to say God, you know.
Okay.
That's the question. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Imaginary, not imaginary, you know, you can get in arguments. all right, here's another thing. I have this thing that I like to do, which is that I have given permission to some family and friends that anytime they want to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer, that they can do it.
Mm.
And usually when somebody throws a pie, they do it in anger. They do it to somebody they don't like.
Okay.
Right?
Uh-huh.
You're going to throw a pie at the president or something.
Right.
But on the other hand, people love it. They love to throw a pie.
Right.
So I figured I can make people really happy by just giving them permission to do this thing that they really want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I've told people, like, if you want to throw a pie at me full of love and generosity, and I'm going to accept it with love and generosity, that's great. You can do it anytime.
Okay.
And so family and friends, I've been hit with pies like 50 times over the past 20 years. I mean, I've been hit with a lot of pies.
Okay.
But the question is this. I'm going to say you are going to do this same thing. You're going to give permission to somebody. And that person can be anybody you want, somebody living, dead, it doesn't matter who it is. You're going to give permission to somebody to hit you in the face with a pie, and they're going to throw it with love and generosity, and you're going to receive it with love and generosity. And the question is, who would you like to have throw this pie at you?
My friend, my very best friend.
What's his name or her name?
Carolyn Marie. Carolyn.
Carolyn.
Yes.
Carolyn Marie. You want her to hit you in the face with a pie?
Yes.
And what do you imagine, how would that be for the two of you?
It would be great. It would be wonderful.
Wow. Well, yeah. Tell me more.
Oh, because after she hit me in the face with that loving pie, she's going to make love to me.
Okay.
She's going to lick that pie all off of my face. And wherever else I rub that pie, she's going to be licking it.
All right.
Oh, that's going to be loving. And then I'm going to take some of that pie off my face and rub it on her and lick it off of her.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to get down and kinky and freaky and loving and all that stuff.
So you're going to get freaky with the pie.
With the pie.
With the whole pie thing.
With the whole pie thing. I'm going to lick it off. I'll rub it all over and lick it off.
All right. Now, this is something you and she have never done before.
Yes. We've never done that.
Never done this with pie.
Mm-mm.
What new can the pie bring to this? You obviously have a great connection with her already.
Yes.
And so this business about hitting you with the pie, what can that bring you to a new place, the two of you? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, because then it's like you're getting hit with love.
Uh-huh.
You know, so I love pies, yeah. Especially if it's an organic apple pie, organic banana cream pie.
Oh, banana cream pie is good, yeah.
I love those things. So she can hit me with one of those anytime.
Anytime.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a good, wonderful, fun time experience.
Yeah.
You know, you can enjoy the taste of the pie, and then you can enjoy the taste of each other.
Okay.
How much more loving and fun can you get in that?
Yeah. What is good about this thing for me is it is a kind of a forbidden thing, right? You're not allowed usually to hit somebody in the face with the pie.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like we said, you're going to give her permission. You're going to do it. Everybody's going to be in the same boat. So, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
And what's her name? Carolyn?
Carolyn.
Carolyn. Okay.
Yes.
Is she going to listen to the show?
She sure is. I'm sure she's listening right now.
All right. So it's not live. So
she's
not listening now. I guarantee it. She'll listen in a couple of weeks. But so when she listens, you're giving her permission right now.
Yes.
To do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's any time, so it could be a surprise. She doesn't have to let you know ahead of time. It's up to you. You guys get to make whatever deal you want.
Hey, I have to thank you for even coming up with this plan.
Really?
Yes.
All right. Well, I
bring a bunch of fun and excitement to my household.
I have a little card that I made up that, because I have a Facebook page that is called Pie Yourself Free.
Oh, okay.
I've noticed, you know, now being hit with pies over 20 years that there's a thing that happens for me, which is when I turn around and I'm at a party and somebody's coming at me with a pie, you know, all the stuff that normally happens. Like I want to either duck or say no or punch that person in the face, take evasive action.
Okay.
But sometimes I have like 1 second to remember, I said this is okay, and to take a breath and smile and receive it with love. So that to me is like a very special moment that I turn around and the pie is coming and all the parts of my body want to clench closed and I have to open up and receive.
Okay.
And that has become like a little bit of a spiritual moment for me.
Okay.
So
this
is really, I mean, it's funny and it's enjoyable and your friends will love it if you tell them this is okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if you do it, if you start receiving pies, I think this is something that can happen.
And so
if you do it a lot, you know, let me know how it is for you to receive it. I'm curious about the experience and the feelings that come up when people get hit by pies.
Oh, okay.
So if you want to go on the Facebook page and tell us a story or relate something or just send me a personal email and say, oh, my God, this is what happened when I got hit with a pie. It would be good for my research.
Okay. Okay, all right? Great.
So that, you know, that's it. And here.
Okay.
Here's the card. Oop. I'm going to give you one. This one has the Soupy Sales Star, Hollywood Star Walk of Fame, and there's a pie there on it. And you notice on the back it says, Pie Yourself Free. It's always okay to hit me in the face with a pie or squirt seltzer anytime without warning.
Okay.
So I've now given you this card. You have permission to hit me with a pie anytime. If you see me on the street or you want to come by someplace, feel free.
Okay.
But also, you could give this card to Carolyn or to anybody else and, you know, pass it on.
Okay.
So,
great.
Experience the sublime service in receiving a pie with love and joy in your heart.
Okay, great.
So just like there's a way to throw a pie, there's a way to receive a pie.
There you go. Yeah.
So that's my pie story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's great. I like that.
It's been an interesting You know, 20 years of receiving pies.
20 years of receiving pies, yeah. Okay.
I'll just tell you one time this happened. I was driving from San Francisco back to Los Angeles with my wife. We're not together anymore, but we were married at the time. Mm-hmm. And we have our kid who's 7 or 8 in the car with us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're on a long drive and we're having an argument. We're having a married people argument in the car. And we're getting irritated with each other. And she says, I got to get out of this goddamn car. You know, there's a Caro's coming up. Mm-hmm. Let's go in there. Let's just get out of the car and get something to eat. So I drive up to the Caro's restaurant, and we get there, and she says, stop here. Let us out, and you go park the goddamn car. I said, okay, that's fine with me. So wife and kid get out. They go into the restaurant. I go park. I park a little bit far away, so I have an extra long way to walk so I can just be away from her for a couple minutes. And I'm going up to the restaurant, and she comes running out the door with a pie in her hand. She says, I'm so mad at you. And she winds up and she's just letting me have it. And I only have time to take off my glasses and to adjust my attitude, right? Because I don't want to receive a pie. I'm also angry.
Yes.
But she's coming at me, and I gotta switch it up right away. And there's a couple walking next to us, some other people, and the wife starts laughing. And my wife just, wham, hits me with that pie. And I didn't want to receive it, but I said it was okay. And so I had to just take a breath and, you know, made her feel better. And the 7 or 8-year-old kid is laughing his butt off. And I got to go into the restroom and take the pie off of my face and then come back out and sit at the table.
Okay.
And we had a meal. And it helped. It changed things.
That was great.
I mean, we still got divorced. But in that moment, it was also a very intimate thing.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Like the moment when I did not want to receive my wife's anger.
Right, exactly.
That I challenged myself to take it, to take it with love and generosity.
Right.
And
then you did it. And
that's the stuff. That's the moment.
That's a good solution, too.
Yeah,
that was great.
That's wonderful. I've received that pie with as much love as I could.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And especially in front of your son.
Yeah.
Because now you're not arguing and fighting and going back and forth, and he can see that.
Right.
Both his parents are yelling, that was wonderful. So he sees it and he's laughing. And
he learns that the way to deal with problems when you get to be an adult is to hit somebody in the face with a pie. My job is done, you know what I mean? I taught the kid the important lessons of life. All right. Okay, I got a couple more questions here. You have a somewhat quirky sleeping or bedtime ritual. What is it?
Well, I don't think it's quirky, but I do meditate.
You meditate?
I do meditate before I go to bed.
It's not that quirky.
No, it's not quirky.
What kind of meditation? What do you focus on when you meditate?
Focus on silence, basically, just silence, trying to, bring more calm and peace into my heart.
I don't know how to make fun of that or make any jokes about that.
Oh, well.
I meditate to bring calm and peace into my heart. I'm like, okay, next question. That's boring, dude. I'm just telling you. You know, you got to tell me something weird or uncomfortable, and then I get to make fun of you, and then we laugh about it, and other people on the, can like, oh, yeah, I totally relate. That's the kind of stuff. But, you know, you meditate, and it makes you a better person. Boring. Hello.
Well, you know what? It makes me better, so I'll give you an example. I catch the bus a lot, and so I'm going to tell bus stories to my friend Scott Schultz. He does bus at Los Angeles.
Yes.
This guy gets on the bus. He's wearing this little cross on his chest.
Yeah.
And he gets on, and he slams his tap car down and all this stuff. So he's yelling at the bus driver, I'm going to fuck you up like that. And the bus driver says, hey, I only said you have to tap the car lightly, blah, blah. But he's going to kick the bus driver's ass, and we're driving. So I'm like, hey, I'm trying to learn how to handle problems without using violence. Mm-hmm. But I shouldn't think violence.
But that's the first thing that came to my mind.
Yes.
I said, if you step over here and touch this bus driver or even come near, I said, I'm going to fuck you up. I said, I'm going to take this. I took off my jacket and I slammed it down on the thing. I said, I don't give a fuck how big you are. Yeah. I'm going to beat your ass and see how skinny I am. And everybody's looking on the bus at this big old dude and everybody just starts laughing. You know, they're just laughing.
Laughing at you.
They're laughing at me. This little skinny dude is going to beat up this big old dude. And so I said, you better sit your ass down. And then the dude did it. But he was all irate at first. And he sat down. I said, I didn't even have to throw a punch. Great. I felt happy about that. I felt happy I didn't have to throw a punch. You know what I mean? So I didn't have to use the violence.
I'm just going to clarify that all this meditative activity, all it's done is to move you from punching somebody in the face to threatening to punch somebody in the face. And that's a real benefit for you. That's growth. You've graduated from punching to only threatening to punch.
There you go. I didn't have to punch him in the face. I didn't have to use any violence.
You've been meditating. That's really nice. We're going to end there because that's a very heartwarming story. I didn't have to punch the guy in the face. All right. Well, we're running out of time. Do you have anything else that we need to get in here? Anything you want to plug or promote or, you know, any corporate sponsors that you need to mention their stuff so that you get a paycheck at the end of the week or, you know, anybody you want to call out as particularly helpful or not helpful in your life?
Well, you know, all my storytelling friends have been very helpful.
Yeah.
The owner of the Blue Elephant Cafe, very helpful. She gave me and Kate a spot to do our...
What's her name? Let's give her a...
Her name is Enri.
All right.
Okay, she owns the
Blue Elephant Cafe. Yeah.
Yes.
And where is it?
It's 2024 Washington Boulevard in Los Angeles.
Is that Culver City?
It's the Adams District.
Adams, okay. Yeah, a little Adams farther east than that. All
yeah.
Right. Well, and, give her a shout out. That's good, yeah.
And pretty close to USC. And nice. Yeah. Oh, really
that
nice
cafe. That
neighborhood's
really popping up.
Yeah.
Right?
That cafe is one of a kind. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's the best free storytelling spot in Los Angeles because we do the show once a month and it's free.
Yeah.
So you can come there.
This is the Elephant Tales Wednesday night.
Yes.
First Wednesday of every month.
Yes. And get your free peanuts.
See, I'm still plugging the show.
Yeah, there you go.
Free peanuts. You didn't mention that. Wait till the end of the show to mention the free peanuts. Wow. All right. Way to bury the lead. All right. Well, we're out of time. I would like to thank my guest, the very popular storyteller, Horace Raw.
Yes.
For coming in this week. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, these are them. Not bad looking, right?
Oh, they're very nice.
Yeah, nobody has bought one. It could be because they're about $20. You know, once you get them custom printed and shipped and all that stuff, they get a little bit expensive.
Oh, okay.
But that may not explain the reason that no one has purchased one.
Oh.
It just could be because nobody really listens to the show and nobody gives a shit. So that could happen. But if you want to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, or even see what the photo looks like. It's kind of hard to take a photo of a coffee mug, you know what I mean? Because it's roundish, and you take a photo, and it doesn't really ever look like, you know.
You should take a photo at the drone box. They'll do a 360
shot
of it.
Oh, a panoramic.
Yes.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Okay, I'm going to do that. If you would like to buy a Comedy Death Star coffee mug, you can email me at comedydeathstar@acsdigital.tv. Our theme music was written and performed by Dean Mermel, a friend of mine. You've been listening to Comedy Death Star, the official podcast of Actors Comedy Studio right here in Hollywood, USA. I love saying that part because it's Hollywood, USA, and I get to say it. So I'm your host, Denzel Myers. Thanks for listening. We will be back next week. Horace, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Great having you. Thanks.
Thank you.